Welcome, everyone, to the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. For anyone who's out there, you can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro, B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. And again, if you want to find us or listen to us, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. So with that being said, I have a very special guest with us today. He's going to the director and the producer of the show we're working on called Foodtopia. I'm very excited about it. Our timing is great. But he is the owner and founder of Residue Remains Production, and his name is Chris Black. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing excellent. Excellent. How are you?
I'm doing well. I hope you're here in New York. It's been raining for like, 10 days straight. It's like the New York monsoon, I think, is the hashtag going around. How's things in Los Angeles? I hope it's warmer there.
We got a little sunshine finally, but I hear we're going to get some rain again later this week. We've had just the most crazy weather that I've seen in 23 years out here. We've got so much rain. It's like I feel like I'm living in Seattle sometimes. But today I'm very thankful. Warm, sunny day. And I'm talking to you. So it's really great.
So let's talk about, the New York monsoon, I hope, ends soon. I think everyone's joking around that it's Seattle in New York also because the amount of rainfall we've had. And literally, I've been trying to record different podcasts and stuff. And the thunder and the lightning and the rain is so hard that it's even hard to it's not picking up in the recording, but I can even hear it in the studio, which is unusual. Like normally you can't hear it, but you can, how hard it's raining and how hard it's storming. So that's kind of crazy. But let's talk about you. Let's talk about your history. I obviously know you. We've been working on the TV show now for almost 4 months, which is pretty excited that we've come so far with it. But let's talk about your history. How'd you become a director? How'd you get into the film and TV space, or movie and TV space, whatever the proper terms are? I'm learning as I go here through a fire hose. But talk to me about your childhood, your history, and how you ended up where you are right now. So take as much time as you want, and the long version's better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and a little bit about me from the very beginning. I'm from a very small town in Wisconsin. Probably more cows than people. Although we are the city of the county, because we have three stoplights now, last time I was home. So being a child, I had to be very creative to entertain, and I was an only child for most of my life, up until about 12. So I had to entertain myself a lot. My parents both worked a lot. My father was gone. He was a cross-country truck driver, so he wasn't home very much, and my mom worked long hours. So yeah, I was a latchkey kid, and I think my imagination grew from there, and I think that's probably where it all started, from me wanting to get into this crazy entertainment world as an actor and everything else. Was just, I had lots of hours alone and I had to entertain myself. So I think that's how it kind of got started. But as you grow older, things happen. And I was actually a pretty good athlete throughout junior high and high school, and ended up getting a football scholarship to play wide receiver at a Division II college back in Wisconsin. So, I kind of gave up the hopes and dreams of I'm not going to go to Hollywood and do all that. We'll go to college. We'll get our business degree. We'll play some football. They're paying for it, so it's great. But very soon in, I realized, this isn't for me. And I gave up my scholarship after my first year, transferred schools, and kind of just found myself for a year or so. And that's when I really went kind of full force into the film stuff. I started, with my business courses, of course, but I also, I went into a ton of creative writing and acting classes and theater and started to do all that. And it just, from there I realized this is what I have to do. And, about a week after I graduated, I packed up my car. I had $500 in my pocket. I would suggest always having much more before you move to Los Angeles.
No kidding. Holy crap.
And I knew one person, and we, you know, we shared this little studio apartment that used to be a small little motel room. And that was the start of it. And that was, well, this month is actually 23 years that I've now been out here, and honestly pretty much been very, very fortunate and blessed to be working as a professional for like those 23 years, which, you know, is something I'm really proud of.
Talk to me about, like, once you got out there, like you're in a hotel, right? Like or an old hotel in a studio with someone else. How did you start? What did you do? What were some of the first things you did to enter the film business? Because I mean, you have this dream of being an entertainer. What do you do, like, when you get out there? Like, how do you figure this out?
Well, you know, I think you should probably have a better resume than I did when you come out. You know, get your headshots already done, have that. I was very unprepared. I absolutely, you know, looking back, I'm like, that took some balls. What the hell were you thinking? Because it's, you know, I think everybody has their own path. For me, my first thing was, I was like, I got to find a gym to work out at. Because I was still, you know, I've always been very fitness through, because after I gave up football, I became a boxer. And that's a whole other side we can get into later. But
yes, I want to hear about this for sure.
You know, so I was like, I got to find a gym. So I found the first gym I could within walking distance, was right off of Hollywood Boulevard. Went in, liked it, you know, joined and everything. But then I also realized, well, I need a job. So I got a job at this gym working overnights that I was going to do. And because it was a 24-hour gym. But ironically, while I was there working out one day, a man approached me and said, hey, you know, you got a great look. I'd love to take your picture. I got a manager who I think would love, you know, your look and maybe want to work with you. Naive me, I'm like, this is awesome. Yeah, let's do it. So did some photographs with this photographer, met this manager, and, you know, he seemed a little weird, but I was like, all right, this is, you know, I'm from a small town, you know, I've only been here 2 weeks now. And he ended up booking me as like a featured extra on the film Pearl Harbor for one day here in LA. And I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And I played this like all burned up soldier. And at the end of the day, Michael Bay, the director, selected, he wanted a bunch of people to, young sailor looking type people, to come to Mexico for 2 weeks, for, you know, larger parts. And I got chosen just randomly out of a lineup.
So we're talking about the movie Pearl Harbor is Ben Affleck in that movie?
Ben Affleck and Josh Hartnett.
Yep. Josh Hartnett.
Alec Baldwin.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, huge. I just, you know, I was out here 2 weeks. I didn't even really I barely had a headshot, and I'm about to be on one of the largest budgeted films in Hollywood history. So it was a whirlwind of just like, oh my God. So I went down to Mexico, Fox Baja Studios, is where we filmed it. And it's actually the same place where they filmed Titanic, because they have a large pool that is right on the ocean. So when you're in it and it's filled up, it looks like you're just endless seas. And the back of the Titanic ship was still there at the studio. So, I mean, it was incredible. You know, I'm a kid from a town of 3,000 people. And is like, oh my God, like, where am I? So that was just 2 weeks of absolutely.
What an experience.
You know, every day getting to listen to Michael Bay scream, because he was very good at it. But just, I got to see, you know, at that time I wasn't really thinking, you know, oh, I'm going to be a producer. I just want to, you know, I was like, I just want to be Brad Pitt. That was like, that's was in my head. I'm like, I want to be Ben Affleck and them that are starring in this. But I got to see all the moving parts, like what it took to, you know, these ships that they built, and, you know, how many people were on set on the crew. It was just mind blowing for me. So that experience, you know, that was amazing. It went fantastic. And then I kind of went back to the real world and, you know, started to do the, you know, the normal thing, get into acting classes and get, you know, get better headshots and build the resume, get an agent, all those typical steps you take. And, you know, I got to, you know, be in the movie Catch Me If You Can with Leonardo DiCaprio, directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, that one's an awesome one. The airport, he was a con artist or something, right? Based on a true story.
Yeah, it's based on a guy who became basically the best counterfeiter the FBI had ever seen. And they finally caught him. They, instead of putting him in jail, they're like, why don't you come work for us? Because you're better than any of us here. And you can, you know, you can pick out anything counterfeit just by looking at it in a second. So, yeah, that was, you know, another amazing experience.
That would never happen to me. I'd be thrown in jail. There would be no greener grass on the other side. I'm just saying, I don't know how that guy pulled it off, but that's just not, like, I have to stay clearly on the good side of things for the good things to happen. Yeah, so anyway, definitely. Go ahead. Well, and let's talk about Michael Bay for a second, because I think he did like Transformers. He's done a ton of big blockbuster movies.
Bad Boys.
Those are some of my favorites. Anyway, go on. So after Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah. So then, you know, kind of just was in the world of just kind of lower, you know, indie films, lots of, you know, horror movies are always most people's first venture into it. So I did a ton of those things. I can't even remember all the ways that I've been killed on screen. I think I had a jackhammer driven through my mouth, my tongue bitten out, and like, I mean, I've died so many ways on film. I've been cut in half, like blown up by a bomb in a war film. You know, and I did that for a few years, and then I met an older writer and producer, and we teamed up and we started a small little production company and got a couple films that we wrote together and then produced, and I starred in. And that was kind of my really first hands-on being a producer, you know, when we wrote this project and then having to hire people and cast people and see, like, you know, where money's going, how much it cost. And that was kind of my film school 101 were these two films. You know, the first one is called The House That Jack Built. And I got to, you know, play, we had Joe Mantegna, who was on the CBS series Criminal Minds. He's also in The Godfather. He played my father in the film. It was just a really great experience, but I wouldn't suggest just coming out and try to write, act, and produce your first film all in one. It was a little overwhelming, but I learned so much. And if I knew what I know now back then, it's like, oh man, would have been so much different. So that's when I basically kind of went into the producing side and stepped away from being in front of the camera and went behind it. I still get pulled in to in front of it in some of these projects that I do when we were like, we need a cop or we need a doctor. I was like, all right, let's do it. With the acting hat back on and stop thinking about the numbers and the logistics of everything. And that's really what I've been doing about the last 15 years or so, is just solid producing, both working as a freelance and developing my own projects and my own shows. So it's been a really wild 23 years, lots of ups and downs. But I wouldn't trade it for any of the lives that my buddies are all still living back home. I'm like, I couldn't be a dentist, bro. I love you, but there's no way in hell I can sit and do that for 40 years.
Me neither. I just could not do this. If I have a repetitive thing that I do all the time, it's very hard for me. And that's why I like the project we're working on, because while it's the same thing potentially over 18 seasons, potentially a 19th season over 12 years, we're going all different places all over the world and different cities, meeting different people, different things. Like, the creativity is endless in every city around the world, I feel like. So that's one of the cool things. But talk to me about, like, what you, like, because I don't think the world really understands, how do you gain experience in this? How did you, you know, get more producing? How did you get experience with the writing? Like was there a mentor you had? Were you just learning from every time you got an opportunity to be on film? Because I don't think, like, it just seems like for me, like, I'm not in this space until recently, although I've been, like, probably manifesting this my whole life. I would direct movies on my parents' farm. Like, I flooded the creek in my parents' farm, like, built a dam, and then try to do, like, an Indiana Jones movie with my friends and stuff like that. So I've always had an interest in this, just sports and soccer, and then my family being in food, and then starting a food business with my father and business partners when I was 18. I went that direction, but I've always had this weird itch, and I was a shy kid. Like, I grew up on a farm too. My town had maybe 130 people in Maryland in it, and while we were like 25 minutes away from DC, there was no walking to see my friends. And so I had to entertain myself. I played soccer. I mowed fields. I became an entrepreneur. I sold fruit on the side of the road until I was old enough to drive around the fruit stands and then have them all over the place. But I also was heavily attracted to the entertainment, to the acting, to the being behind a camera, what it meant to write something. And for me, I know, like, how long it took me, like, 12-ish years before I really understood the food business, even as an entrepreneur, where I'm like, okay, I'm not so much drinking out of a fire hose anymore. Like, I'm starting to get my feet underneath me. And even though there's success and losses in the meantime, it's this weird thing that truly experience and exposure takes a long time. So how did you get it? Like, was there individuals there who mentored you? Like, talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, you know, going back to my childhood, you know, I remember, you know, where I lived, I'd go out into the woods for hours, and I'd, you know, play Rambo. I thought I was playing army for real. Like, you know, my mom gave me a real knife, you know, one of those with a compass on it and matches, and I think you can saw down little trees. And I'm like, I don't know why she gave this to a little child, but
I had one of those too.
I was just always in my head and imagination. I was always making things up. I mean, even if I would play with G.I. Joes, you know, I'd get up on our roof in the winter and I'd make little parachutes and I'd throw them. And then I'd have the whole story. It's like, all right, guys, we'll find them when it melts. We can't, you know, like, I would make up all these stories, all just to entertain me. And I think that kind of led me to where, you know, first wanting to be an actor, but then realizing, you know, I really enjoy, like, storytelling, and I always had this kind of business sense and putting pieces together and just doing it like that. And as far as, like, how I did it, you know, I don't think it's the same for everybody. I think everybody's path is different. You know, but when I, you know, I obviously had the experience in my first, you know, I had two features as a lead producer and writer, so that helped me get some other smaller writing jobs. But writing wasn't, you know, isn't really one of the passions that I have. I love it, but, you know, producing and the directing now is what I've primarily focused on. And, you know, I think that taking some smaller things when I was, you know, maybe I was about like 15, 16 years ago, where I would, you know, just take any production job, like a UPM, or, you know, do you have a production supervisor or anything, just so I could, you know, learn more the ins and outs of some of the stuff I didn't know about production. Because my partner that I was working with and kind of helped mentor me with writing and things, he was just a writer. He wasn't, you know, a producer, and neither one of us really knew what we were doing producing these films. So I kind of learned that on my own and watched just tons of documentaries and people that, you know, that I wanted to emulate, basically, and just slowly kind of keep putting things together. And I you know, honestly, I wouldn't say it's probably like in the last 5 years where I really feel like I've got a great grasp of production, knowledge and producing, and know, like, what it really takes to put words on a page and get it on a screen. And, you know, it's that whole process, the prep of it, the production, the post and selling it. Like, I finally now, you know, feel like, yeah, this, I got it. Not that I can't learn more. We always can. But it's been a journey. You know, it's been 23 years of just learning and relearning.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm like 25 years in from when 18 when I started that business, but I've always been an entrepreneur. But weirdly, it's like that 23-year mark for me, 25-year mark. It's weirdly where now there's a new sense of confidence. Like I've stacked a lot of skills and a lot of experience that I think individuals in their 20s and 30s, like some people just get it quicker and they stack skills faster maybe, or they get better opportunities. But for me, growing up the way I did and my parents too were not creative individuals whatsoever. My parents are very like reality based and just in head in the clouds and dreaming big, whether it was business or movies or soccer was just uncomfortable for them, to put it slightly. Like, what are you doing? Like, we need to be in reality here. And I'm like, okay, well, I have this things in my head and stories and things I want to do. And even this creatively, like, you know, I didn't play instruments or anything like that. It's like, oh, you got to work on the farm. If you don't work on the farm, an animal might die. So there's a huge sense of responsibility I always felt for everyone and everything, and a lot of lack of selfishness for sure. But you're alone all the time. So you're right. You know, my experience versus them, where they grew up in a town and they had neighbors right next door, was I grew up on a farm. I had no one else other than my sister and some of my older siblings around. And aunts and uncles that would sort of just be there, but the age differences were significant. My sister was close in age somewhat, but still we had to find things to do. I mean, there's not a lot to do on a farm, and we didn't have a satellite dish or anything, so there wasn't a lot of TV happening there, and like Nintendo and stuff, I was interested in it, but I was never a kid that was attracted to video games. I liked being outside. And I liked being creative. And like you said, I was always finding cool things to do. He-Man was my thing. Like I had He-Man characters and I was always like developing the battles, and I had Matchbox cars. And it was like, if I was ever going to go there and I wasn't outside, it became this whole orchestra in like my parents' basement of like this like 5-hour thing I had planned out in my head that I wanted to play out. Like just... I think about it now, it's so strange, but I literally was like piece by piece. I can plan things out in my head really well, probably better than most people. Like I can see a vision and I can see 12 years down the road and I can manifest things. I just didn't realize how important of a skill it was when I was a kid, because I could just, oh, I know where I want to go with this. I know how to plan it out. In like 10 minutes, I figured out how I was going to spend the next 5 hours of my day with this epic battle between He-Man and Skeletor and all their crew. And, you know, with legs flying and arms being popped off and, you know, heads and, you know, but I took really good care of my toys also, interestingly, even though I threw them off buildings. And sometimes I always have like really, really cared for things. It took like high value in them. It's probably because I had to buy them myself with my allowance and stuff, other than when it was Christmas and my birthday and stuff. So what is your favorite part about all this, Chris? Like right now you're like, oh, I finally figured out what I'm doing, and you're starting to get into a new path and you act here and there. But what is your favorite part? Like what, like is the thing that you're like, okay, I could do this for the rest of my life. What exactly is that?
The producing and directing, you know, and the producing especially, you know, I absolutely love the process of it. You know, there's so much that goes into it, because there's the creative side of film, you know, and then there's the business side, and you know, the reality of is this project is it viable? Is it going to be commercially friendly? Is it going to be this? And we're, you know, I feel like every project is like someone just, when someone brings me something like that, I feel like there's just a, someone dumps like this huge jigsaw puzzle in front of me, and I just get to sit there and put it together. And I love being able to put all these other creative people together, because that's, you know, one of my, you know, mottos or creeds, I guess, as I always say, I never want to be the smartest person on set. I can't tell you what certain, you know, lenses or lighting or things like that, or what kind of makeup you need to get this look. That's why I hired you. I hired someone smarter and better than me. My job is to find the best people in front of the camera and behind the camera, put them together and let them be them and do what they do. And it's, that's the most gratifying when I see, you know, whether it's someone on the makeup team or the camera team that gets and lighting that gets this amazing looking shot, or it's the actor who turns out an amazing performance from the director working with them. I mean, that's what gets me off.
Talk to me a little bit about that, because I mean, you've talked about Michael Bay and Steven Spielberg. Obviously, like, they're some of the best in their own way, and you're obviously starting to pave the way yourself, which I really enjoy your work. And I have, like, as we've worked on the Foodtopia project, I've looked at some of it. I'm now familiar with IMDb, and which I wasn't a few weeks ago or even 2 weeks ago, when they're like, and people are like, you need to go get an account if we're going to do this. And I'm like, what is that? It's almost like the LinkedIn, I guess.
The Bible. Yeah, it is. It's like the LinkedIn, the Bible for, you know, where if you, anyone who's doing anything, they're on IMDb. And it's a great resource as well. So
yeah, I felt a little sheltered actually. Once I'm like, where have I been that this massive, awesome research for film and TV is there, and I can read about the actors and because I do research on actors and their story, but I never realized there was this whole database that connects the film, the producers, the screenwriters, you know, the cinematographers, whatever it is. Like, it's pretty incredible. But the directing thing, I want to talk about this, because directors almost act like, I don't, for lack of a better term, and in my understanding, they're almost like the parent of the film, and they have to mentor and guide the actors and all of the different teams. Because I just watched this thing on Tom Cruise. Everyone's like, you got to watch this thing on Tom Cruise. He did a speech, I believe. I can't remember what it was for. The producers, whatever that was. I don't remember what the organization's called, because I'm not from this field, which probably gives me a little bit of advantage. I don't have any constructs that are normal in the business. I'm like, oh, do whatever. And but then I also watched a little thing on him, and he like talks about all the departments he learned and all the things he learned, you know, even as an actor, all the things that he's aware of, or director or producer or whatever. So talk to me a little bit about that relationship you have to form during that, like when you are producing and directing.
Well, I think there's the relationship between the director and the producers, you know, and that's a separate relationship that's, you know, always creatively trying to find that balance of, you know, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, if you start from the prep kind of production, like right now where there's, you know, I have some projects where it's, you know, the director wants this actor, and I say, well, this actor doesn't give us enough value. I need someone with a stronger name. So it's in that. So you, there's that kind of thing, and finding the balance, and then about what, you know, how do you see this story and this script? How do you want to tell it as the director? You know, here's some of my ideas as a producer, and then melding all those creative ideas that still fit, you know, and work with the business side of things. So I know that when we're done, we got a project and an IP that is going to be wanted, and we're going to go out and it's going to be successful and get to do more. And then, you know, then you have the director working with, you know, the talent when you're actually on set. And that's another whole other relationship. That definitely is the parenting part that you're kind of talking about. They definitely, you know, depending on who the talent is, but just the, you know, the massaging, the coddling, like, you know, making sure they feel safe and secure to give the best performance that they can. So, and that's a relationship I also love when I'm directing. I love working with talent and making them feel comfortable enough to explore, you know, the role and know what they're trying to do, and just give them complete support, you know, because that's, I think, you know, coming from being an actor and also writing and producing and directing, I try to use all of those and think about each person in those moments where it's, let me take my producer hat off for a moment, think like a director to talk to this actor. And I sometimes want to go in and yell and be like, Jesus, can you not remember three fucking... Oh, I don't know if I can swear. I'm sorry.
You can swear all day long. Don't worry, absolutely. I gave up on any of that.
I'm like, you can't just say these three fucking words. But I want to like yell it because I'm like, we need to go. We're running out of sunlight. We're doing like, you know. But as the director, you got to like, okay, listen, what's going on? Why can't you get this out? Let's try this. You want to change the words a little bit? Is it not coming off, rolling off your tongue right? And there's those two, the balancing of those two things. So it's, you know, there's different relationships through all of it. And then you have the, as a producer, working with each department, you know, working with camera department, making sure, you know, it's like, all right, is this really, this is the camera you need? I know we need these lenses. So let's make it all work. And then with makeup and wardrobe, I mean, those are all things that, the director, you know, works a lot with too. Getting the look of the characters. So there's so many interpersonal relationships and different moving parts on a production. It's, you know, for someone who's never seen it, it's, you know, it's sometimes gets overwhelming. You know, and I just produced a film in November that we're in the process of selling right now. And it was the very first film for this, the executive producer. And she had written a book, and the film was based off the book, but she was, you know, when she was on set, and we were a relatively smaller project, but she just couldn't believe all the moving parts. It's like, oh, wait, we got to wait for the lights to be ready. And then we bring someone in to get the lighting and set the marks. And then they do, we got to do wardrobe and hair. And it's all these, you know, oh, what are we having for lunch today? And there's all, you know, it's, and again, it's just things that I love doing and kind of corralling and keeping together. But the relationships vary depending on what hat I have on.
Find that in business too. And I think that's why, like, one of the things that I was uber impressed with you by, and I'm just going to say it, is your ability to budget, to do the things that you've done just for our show. As we've had conversations, and I'm like a fish out of water, and I'm trying to manage relationships, a lot of different ones with a lot of different individuals, and just your ability to turn the abstract into like finite budgets, you know, and as a business person, that's always had to do that. And then it's always the struggle then to get everyone to make sure we stay within the budget, which is part of what we're talking about here, right? You know,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
So there's this skill that has to take place, and you have such a gentle nature about you, and like there's confidence, but there's like, but kindness and just a respect that I have for you just based on what we've done and what I've been able to do as a business person, because it's few and far between individuals that can really have the demeanor to handle that pressure, to handle the tough conversations where people are doing too much or spending too much, or the aggressiveness, or what the fuck are you doing, dude? What's up with your three lines? Or how the fuck can't you make a turkey sandwich, dude? In my case, like, are you fucking kidding me? Does your wife do everything for you? Why are you in a food business if you've never even entered foot in the kitchen in your house, man? But it's like,
yep.
But you can't say that out loud, and it's the ability to sort of, okay, I've got to have patience and kindness and love for this individual, and I'm just going to have to teach them or demonstrate it or lead by example or hope they catch whatever I'm throwing. And, but I relate to that a lot. And obviously I'm probably going to be one of those individuals in your life here in the near future. If everything goes according to plan, where I'm going to be a total fish out of water, a total new person in this, but I have the confidence in you. And why this team? Because I just feel your demeanor, the way you handle things, the way you're able to turn around your work. It's just impressive to me. And the rest to me is your character and sort of your core values, and you're, nothing's below you. That is the one thing that it's essential for me in human relationships, is anyone who thinks they're above anything, I have trouble working with. I don't know why that is, but I don't trust them for some reason. And right off the bat, one of the first things you said is, I'll do whatever it takes. We'll figure this out and I'll build from the bottom. And I was just like, okay, this is going to work. And it's interesting because how many relationships do we have in life where we try to force it or we try to make it work and it's just like it doesn't work. But it's this weird thing. Like if you know at the beginning, sometimes you know. And so it's a compliment. And I just want to say thank you And thank you for your patience always with me. But I just wanted to make sure that the reason everyone knows I asked you on the show, because I'm so impressed with who you are as an individual and what you've accomplished and what you've been able to do. There would be no, you know, 18 seasons laid out over 12 years or how far we've done this and just blown the top off of everyone's expectations without you. I mean, it's been impressive. Obviously, the whole team matters, but you were just such an incredible piece to that. So I just want to say that publicly beforehand. I'll give it to everyone in our speech when we win whatever awards we possibly win for TV. I don't even know what the trophies are. I just know I want to go win them. And
yeah, we will. We definitely will. But I mean, thank you so much for that's so kind of you. I mean, I'm, you know, I don't know what to say. I'm almost blushing if you could see me. I really appreciate that. I do try to do all those things that you say, you know, because it is in this business, and you don't, you know, you're new to it, but the more you get into it, you'll see that there's a lot of people who do things differently and just aren't as empathetic and, I guess, willing to maybe go the extra mile and do things, you know. And it's kind of like, you know, when I met you guys, and I talked about synergy from the very beginning when we all met, you know, how we met. It's, you know, through Noble just texting me one day about hey, I got this kind of food show thing. They were asking if I knew a producer, wondering if you'd be interested. And I've known Noble for, I don't even know how many years. I've hired him on multiple projects, working on my camera department. You know, and it was so weird. And we didn't really have like a personal relationship when we first reached out. And then it's, you know, it all just kind of came together. And then with you and Steven, it's like, I just feel every time that we're, you know, on the phone together and talking, or, you know, just even through email exchange, like we've always been so, really so in sync about things. I feel like when it comes to this show, like with these ideas that we just bounce off, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, we had like a little 5-minute text exchange, I think, when we came up with like Foodtopia and the little tagline, because we were all just kind of there spitting out ideas, and it was just like, oh wow, this is it.
Yeah.
Like as soon as you said it, I was like, this done. That's the name. And I just, you know, that, I think that goes just to show everyone's, you know, character that, you know, who's involved with this, you know, that we're all willing to, you know, go out and put some work in, get a little dirty, you know, before any of us really even know if it's going to happen, you know, because there's always the chance that it doesn't. And, you know, and I didn't know, but I knew that I was going to try to do everything I could to help us get this show off the ground. And, you know, and it just seems like the universe right now is really working in our favor. You know, just as you were getting the connections with Netflix and we're getting ready to present them with this stuff, you know, the unfortunate incident of a writer's strike happens. But wow, does that open the door for us in just a huge way. So I just feel like, you know, everything's just really working in harmony.
Preparedness
right,
definitely
us.
Met opportunity there for sure as we go on this today, and I'm actually going to turn around and release this episode right today. It's going to jump to the front of the list over all of them, and we did record with Steven also, but he's going to go after this also because I have to do a second part with him. But to your point, the synergy is just kind of incredible and how well we work together. It's almost like, you know, you don't need to be the greatest individual players on a team, but when you have a synergy like we have and we move things in these weird things, like almost like spiritually come out of some of these conversations that move mountains. I don't even know how to describe it. And just so the audience knows, I have tried to do a TV show a long time ago, maybe 3 years ago, called Barbecue Brawls. And I was involved in that a little bit and we developed it and all that. And I didn't have, like, the team always felt wrong to me. I didn't feel like everyone was being honest and straightforward. And ultimately, the idea, I didn't know that we had to copyright things. I didn't know how everything worked. And because I was in the dark, I got taken advantage of big time. And they went off and produced the show totally based on the way we designed it, but not with any of the people involved that helped me design it, do it, or whatever. We went to a guy and he took the idea and did it himself. And so
I was, oh my gosh, that's, I didn't mean to cut you off. That's just awful.
Yeah. I mean, you guys can look it up on TV.
I was like, wait a minute. I know this show. Cause I mean, I'm a foodie. I watch the Food Network all the time. Oh my gosh. That's, and you know what? I can empathize cause I had a film taken, pitched it, had it all someone to put money in. And then they said, no. 6 months later, I'm like, you know, this movie looks a lot like my fucking film. What's going on? You guys didn't even change the title.
Exactly.
Are you kidding me?
I didn't even know that was possible. I didn't even think people were that blatant and stealing ideas. But, I mean, we even had the Instagram page formed and everything, and we created, like, a little contest to, like, bring people in that people came in because we were recruiting locals and came up with the whole idea and started putting together the people that were going to come in and stay there for weeks at a time. And we got hotel space, and we even developed a studio, and we had a kitchen built to go do the show in. And all of a sudden, they're just like, the guy just disappears. And next thing you know, like without constantly trying, like 3 months go by, and I see there's another TV show, the exact same name with the exact same concept, almost the exact same layout we designed for the show and the way it was supposed to be laid out. And we even had thought about how perfect it was with COVID coming, that the show, and we were ahead of it, but it was such a good idea, someone stole it. So I've learned since then. And weirdly, as this TV show and opportunity came up again, I really slowed myself down. I made sure that Steven weirdly came into my life like at the right time. And then he met with you guys, and I'm like, okay, these are like, we're a trustworthy group. Like, you know, I don't need documents or anything at all. I was like, okay, the character really matters here. You know, who are these guys? And we got to know each other, and I think that matters. But I did not realize how easily, I mean, TV and movies are a very lucrative business if they're a good idea, I feel like. And what is it called? Syndication and stuff like that. So I didn't realize how an idea could just be taken. You know, it doesn't even matter where it originates. And I think that that's a big part of this. But anyway, I just wanted to anchor that with everyone and who you are, because I do have a slight comparison. It never went as well as we've done. And even the budgets were very hidden, and we were doing them, and I didn't get a lot of help. And, you know, we went ahead and built things without understanding what real commitment was from these studios or TV stations, because you can go find the show we're talking about here. And they'll probably come after me. But it's okay. I have the proof. It's on Instagram. And so bring it on. And the thing is, when we came up with this idea, one of the things when I was thinking about it and the advantage of that past show when we came up with Foodtopia is I knew that if I could design it in a way no one else could possibly replicate, okay? Now it's not only the idea or the set or the way we do the contest or something like that. This is a full-blown scale of a show that has a very structured season one and a very structured season two sets of season finales, or what we call finale seasons. And everything builds up to things, and everything's strategically laid out, as we talked about. And I have a group that is very, like, noble, and you and Steven are very creative thinkers. So, well, as long as that creativity stays within us and we all stick together as a team like we are, it's just, I don't think anyone could duplicate what we're doing. I think a lot of people would try, but I don't think the knowledge and the synergies are there that we all embrace now. So that's a pretty cool thing that I like, and I'm looking forward to working with you, Chris. Like, I'm very excited to have you be a director and a producer and work with you in this capacity. And I'm also looking forward to not being the ultimate boss for once, or kind of. And so that's kind of fun. Not that I don't like being, but it's okay to be Jesus. Sometimes it's okay to be a disciple or an apostle. So
you know, there you go. Yeah. You're gonna get all your, you'll get your feet wet producing all up until we get ready to roll, and then you just get to be the host and the face of the show, and just, you know, drop your knowledge. You know, that's what's really great, because it's, you know, some of the, I've already learned, you know, whenever you say things about the food industry and restaurants, like, oh wow, I didn't even know that. Like, so I know there's just a plethora of knowledge sitting up there that we're gonna get to put on screen and, you know, really, really just show, you know, like our show is just going to be so different. And that's why I'm so excited about it, you know, and I feel so confident about it. And, you know, you and Steve and I are going to be great hosts. It's going to be, you guys are going to complement each other so well. Yeah, I really, it's been a really great 4 months. It's gone, and I can't believe it's already been, but it just seems like it just happens so fast and things just keep rolling. And now it's like this snowball effect where I'm like, oh man, this thing is getting big. This is, we better get ready to jump on and we're going for a ride.
Yeah, it's incredible. I'm going to say this also about Steven. Weirdly, him and I have this crazy dynamic. One, we come from two different industries, but we learn from each other at a rapid rate. And like even last night, like we're like, we only have 15 minutes to go over this stuff to get back to the networks. And we need to go over it. Next thing you know, like we decide, okay, let's record a podcast. It goes on for an hour. We run out of time. I've got to go on to a second one with him and re-record. But we've also spit out all this information and development and ideas of stuff. And like, it's just such an interesting crew to be around because normally people are so standoffish and so guarded, but we've all sort of trusted each other in a way that has, like I said, let this creativity come to the surface in a way I don't think's ever been done before. And in a way that it's not just another international travel show, and it's not just another entrepreneur show. It's not just another show that goes around the world or whatever. We're talking about crazy things here, like the following of the food in ways that have never been done before. And I'm not going to allow anyone to hear it because this is going to be some of the surprises of the show. But it's like, it's never been done in the way that it's been done this way, because no one grew up in food the way that I did and has the well-rounded understanding, or on a farm for that matter, to understand how this went, and then scaled businesses where we were doing, you know, all of Kaiser Permanente Hospital's patient food, or all of the City of New York patient food and all their cafeterias and so on and so forth. And, you know, there's plenty of other hospital systems and long-term care homes and grocery stores and restaurants, and then direct-to-consumer that I've done. And I've learned all the vertical integration, what it really takes to produce the food that we eat or feed the animals that we eat and handle that. So this is going to be a show that's like none other. And from your guys' perspective, your ability to capture all of it and like put the ideas onto paper, like I said, budget it, understand what kind of cameras we need to use, the right lenses, the right, each city having its own feel. All of these things are just blow me away, because it's like I've seen it in my head for like, because I love to travel and I love food and I love music and I love cars and I love meeting new people. Like I'm a huge networker. Like I'm a network, probably one of the best networkers out there. Like I can't even believe, like I didn't realize how good I was until recently, but it just comes to me so naturally. I also sometimes attract the wrong people, as we talked about before, but this is going to be something that I'm really proud of. And it's a long time since I've been able to say that about something. Like it's truly a group of people, a group of team that we're all very humble and we're all very vision driven, but we're also able to take visions, break them down into goals and small tasks to build them up to what we want to have or the dreams that we're having. So I really enjoy that. Okay, now another question. As we sort of, you know, start to wrap things up here, like who have been the favorite actors, actresses, or maybe producers and stuff you worked with? Like for you, I think, if there's people out there you want to give respect to, or people that maybe you've thought you've had a good relationship with, who would that be and why?
Well, you know, I mean, I'll go back to, I guess my first influential person who kind of gave me just enough confidence to drive out to Los Angeles is $500. Was my drama coach in college. His name was Roger Herring. I've tried to reach out to him and find him, but it's I no luck. But he I would have to say was really he was the match that kind of I needed a little spark to be like, all right, fuck it. I mean, yeah, I got this business degree, but I don't want to use it for that. I'm like, I want to move to Hollywood, you know. And he gave me just enough encouragement, and I that's all it took, you know, Matt. And then once I got out here and, you know, then there was, you know, plenty more, you know, actor wise, you know, funny enough, like Sylvester Stallone was someone that I admired, growing up. He wrote his own material. He produced it. He acted in it. Now he directs. I mean, he's got some of the biggest franchises in the world behind him. You know, his story of having to sell his dog to eat and pay his rent right before he was, you know, got Rocky off the ground and then had to go back and bought his dog back for like 100 times the amount or something. You know, I love, it's kind of those underdogs. And as far as a producer in the Hollywood world, and I never got to meet him or work with him, but his work and everything is kind of what I was like, this man is like my producing idol, and it's Robert Evans. You know, and he's, you know, he was a studio executive, but he also, I mean, gosh, he produced films like Urban Cowboy, Chinatown. The guy, he was a studio executive on The Godfather and produced The Godfather 2 and Love Story. Like, he's, you know, and he's just got a crazy interesting life, because, you know, he also started off as an actor and then became producer and got to run a studio, which it's kind of, one day in the back of my head, I would love to have the opportunity to, you know, just fully run a studio and pick and choose the projects that get greenlit.
Oh my gosh, that we're going to get along really well.
So those, I, you know, I think, and he's the biggest influence, and I've worked with, you know, lots of other writers and directors who have given me, you know, some really great advice. You know, one man, his name is Jim Green. He's still semi-active in the business, but he's mostly retired. But, you know, he's kind of most famous for starting the TV movie. You know, he produced Brian's Song, which is one of the first, and that's about the football player who was dying of cancer, and James Caan. It was this tearjerker of a movie. You know, and he was one of the heads at ABC, and, you know, he's someone that I always looked up to, because he kind of did a lot of things that I was striving and wanting to do.
I feel like they've remade that movie recently, maybe, for some reason, but maybe not. Like, I think that sounds familiar, because I think I've seen two versions of it for some reason.
Yeah, there's two. The first one, I think, was like it's like the mid-70s, like kind of right around where I think I was born. But, yeah, you know, he was a really great influence, and I got to do some writing for him and some producing. He even did some acting for him. So it was, you know, I've been very fortunate to, you know, at least, you know, at the very least, you know, being on set watching Michael Bay, you know, watching his style, and a man in charge of a, you know, $200 million film, and then seeing how Steven Spielberg
it's crazy.
Operates. You know, and then, you know, one of my last real kind of, when I was acting, was I was in the pilot of the TV show Feud, directed and created by Ryan Murphy. And, you know, that was an experience, you know, because I was, you know, I spent the day in bed with Jessica Lange, and Alfred Molina was there in the scene as well. So I'm working with, you know, Jessica Lange as one of the greatest American actresses ever. And Alfred Molina is just a great, classically trained, amazing actor, you know, and getting to just talk to them and, you know, be able to work with them. And then watching Ryan Murphy come in and work and do such a, like, I guess the best way, since we're talking kind of in the food world, his precision and how he directs and everything that he needs is like, it's like the sharpest knife, just making the thinnest cuts of like meat by hand. He was just literally like, I need 13 seconds of this here. I want this. It was like, damn, this man. And everybody, you know, you could see the respect that everybody, everything he said, just jumped and like, let's do it. Whatever he says. And it was, impressive to watch someone of, you know, because he's probably one of the he can do basically anything he wants in the TV and film world because of the success of all his shows like Feud and American Horror Story and Glee. I mean, it's the list kind of goes on.
Yeah. It's incredible. I want to anchor something interestingly. It's interesting that you said Sylvester Stallone. He's always been a role model or a mentor or whatever you want to call it to me. I've met him briefly once. His father had a horse farm near our horse farm, interestingly. And his brother and his father, whatever, once in a while run in the same circles of horses. They had different types of horses. We had quarter horses, but we were close enough. And one of my good friends growing up, he's the one who really was, he was one of the actors in the movies when I would film. We redid Ghostbusters for our version, and we redid Indiana Jones, and we did a Rambo also, which when you said that, and we had one that was called like BB Gun Warfare, where we were actually shooting BB guns at each other. Bad idea with no goggles or anything, but no one lost an eye. But we even did that, and even we did a sledding movie that was like, we made fun of like the bobsled movie, and I was pretty old when that movie came out, so I was like early teens, and I'm still playing around with the camera and stuff, and it's probably why I do what I do now, and I'm trying to figure it all out, because I still have those burning desires like in me, just in a different way. And mm-hmm. I believe in other people and growing other people as well. But one of the things, like you mentioned, was the dog. It's in Rocky 2. They actually, Adrian buys him a dog and brings it back to him. I think it's actually the dog he lost doing the first one to help get there. And then he bought it by the second one. His name's Buttkiss. But I believe it was the actual dog that we're talking about. Hey, Buttkiss, it's me, Buttkiss, yeah. You know. Mm-hmm. And but I want to anchor this also. Those Rocky movies and Sylvester Stallone's work ethic, I mean, he weirdly created the action hero space, in my opinion. Like, I know it was kind of there, and there were movies like that were before that, but in a weird way, he's a great actor to begin with, but he, you know, it wasn't, he wanted to write it, he wanted to act in his own show, his own movie being Rocky. He then wanted to direct, he then, you know, produced, and the way he went about things, like just his physical discipline, his mental discipline, his still today, still going, you know, his ability to adjust to new trends. And I know like early 2000s, late 90s, he had like a weird lull, and you know, he did a Formula One movie, which no one will ever know about. It was from the guy who played Randy whatever in the Remember the Titans movie. The quarterback was the star in the movie.
It's called Driven.
Driven. Driven, yes. Where he like he picks up the quarters.
Kip Pardue?
Yes, Kip Pardue. Yeah, exactly.
I know it. Another film well.
And I've watched that 1,000 times probably, even though no one else does, because I'm a huge Formula One fan, which the audience, if you stay tuned in, you'll figure out how all that plays into. But go ahead, Chris, you were saying something.
Oh, no, I just, you know, that's really funny. There's kind of that similarity with, you know, Sylvester Stallone and, you know, that the history that you have. And, you know, he really is. It's like, you know, hats off for the career that he built and just, you know, going from a, you know, an actor to now directing and producing, you know, blockbuster films, franchises. You know, whether it was Rocky or Rambo or Expendables, I mean, it's, you know, it's just impressive because, you know, there's the business side to it. It's like, it's so hard to, you know, create a successful film, let alone a franchise.
I know.
Let alone multiple franchises.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Okay, you have like the Fast and the Furious, like that's impressive. I get the franchise and they're blockbusters, and Vin Diesel's done an amazing job and went back and bought the rights. I love that he did that. And I think he's trying to do something with, like, I think it's called Pitch or Perfect Dark. I can't remember what the other series is. But it's no, still, like, we're talking about, like, Expendables. We're talking about Rambo. We're talking about Rocky, which is now into the third Creed movie, okay? So not only were there six Rocky movies, then there's now three Creed movies. So that's eight movies just based around one character that this dude wrote when he was dirt poor. You know, mm-hmm. dirt poor, and then risked everything because he wanted to be the actor in the movie, which, I mean, what a better person, because it's so similarly related to his life at the time. And I refer to this as an entrepreneur, too. This is the other thing about those movies. Anyone who goes through a tough time and almost loses their identity, He does it in Rocky III, but he did it over and over again as an actor too. You have to go back to the basics, and you almost have to go back to the fight and go back to your roots. And it's like, for me, when I like started this new venture in life, and a previous life went away and a new one came, there was this like, I needed to go back into the gym. I needed to go back to almost rock bottom on purpose, but not like rock bottom in the sense of rock bottom, but almost put myself where I was back to the basics. That's a better term. And in the hustle and in the grit with everyone else that was struggling as food entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs in general, or musicians or whatever it was. And Nashville played that part for me. Weirdly, it put me in a situation around a group of people that were all hustling, trying to make their way in the world. And even though I felt that I've already made it, it made me realize I've only just begun. I haven't made anything yet. My potential's endless. And I've got to try to chase it for the rest of my life. So weirdly, he's had that impact on me, Sylvester Stallone. I've watched him and he's inspired me, and even his personal relationships and having kids and the way he's handled all of it. I think his daughters have a very successful podcast out there, by the way, that does pretty well. And I think they're launching a TV show, or if they haven't already, based on their family. I don't know how that's doing. But I mean, all of it is just a cool scenario. So Chris, as we wrap things up here, if you could tell anyone anything, there's a lot of people out there, they want to go to Hollywood, or they want to be actors, actresses, or make it in Hollywood, or whatever. I mean, what is the advice you would give to people? Because you've been you're such a veteran now, and you've earned your stripes, and gosh, your experience is incredible. What is it that you could tell them or gift to them to help them out?
You know, I mean, I first and foremost, like, you know, if you want to be an actor, or whether it's a musician or a painter, whatever that passion is, you know, especially if we're just going to talk about entertainment, that this world, you know, it's a beast. And if you can't see yourself, you know, if you can see yourself doing anything else, then don't go for it. You have to want it more than anything in the world. You have to be willing to sacrifice. You know, I guess, you know, part of my sacrifice is all my family lives back in Wisconsin. So I see them, you know, hit and miss, you know, but like, you know, COVID, it's that happened, you know, so you got to be willing to give up some luxuries, you know, and just grind and go for it. But it's got to be something that you can't live without. That the first and foremost, you have to have this unwilling drive and no quit attitude. Like when every, you know, I've had multiple times where every piece of logical advice was saying quit, quit, quit. And I wouldn't. You know, I regrouped. And I was like, okay, what's going on? All right, I gotta change something, but I'm not gonna quit. No fucking way will I quit. I'm too damn stubborn.
Yeah, me too.
And you know, I think the other thing is, and this is a story I'm gonna paraphrase that I heard that Jim Carrey was telling, because to me it hits home so much because of, you know, my parents not maybe doing some of the stuff they wanted. You know, he tells a story about his father, who, you know, he said was a really funny man and could have done so much, but he said he took the safe job. I think he was like a mailman, or he did something. He's like, he just played it safe and just did this. And then you know what happened? When he was 45, he got let go from his company after 20 some years of service, and he was just lost and didn't know what to do. And his point of the story was, if you can fail doing the safe thing in your life, why not fucking fail chasing your dream and your passion? Like, go for it. I would tell anyone, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it is a business or entertainment, or go for it. Because you can play it safe all your life, and it can all be wiped away in a second. Passion. Find something. But find that, because like they say, if you wake up every morning doing something you're passionate about, it's not work. And I believe now through my life, the more you do your passion, like the universe rewards Like it really does. So it's, I don't know where that all goes, that all that advice, you know, how they can take it, but it's passion and drive. I think those are the, I'll end it with those two things.
And I'm going to say this because I want to anchor it. When you follow your dreams and your goals and you take these risks, like, you lose friends, you're going to lose family, you're going to lose the things that are important to you. But you, it's in order to make room for what you're about to bring in your life, the people you're going to surround yourself. And I find that when I shed layers, and it's hard because you've lived in different paces than my family. I've lost a majority of my friends as I've grown or are wanting to achieve more success, but I never wanted to be a failure. And as I've gotten in my 40s, I see my friends lose these jobs they've coveted. They're losing their friends because they're moving across the country. So what they thought they were protecting, or their spouses, you know, I do it for my spouse. Well, those aren't always working out, you know, and the kids don't always respect you in the way you do. So if you're not happy pursuing what you're doing and you're not happy with your life, it ultimately actually leads your life to fall apart and be in suffering and misery. Where if you go chase your dreams and fulfill what you want, you kind of get the things that you want in life, the family, the spouse, the girlfriend, the boyfriend, whatever it is. And it's crazy to me.
You're so right. Yeah, you're so right. I mean, it is, because when you do, it's, you know, and I have, man, I have three amazing best friends back home, but they are never leaving. One's never leaving the hometown, you know, and the other two are going to stay in Madison, Wisconsin. And, you know, I just like, God, the opportunities, guys.
I know. What,
why did you not even, I'm like, your uncle is a famous rock star. Why didn't we have a band? Why were you too scared to do that? Because you wanted to be a doctor to make your parents happy. Okay. And now you're a dentist.
Yeah. It's the craziest thing. So, and the safest road is often not the safest path. The crazy part is because in safety, we get comfortable. And in comfortability, we don't grow our skills. And we don't grow as humans. And it's just this weird hypocrisy that goes on, actually, that I found. And I was always like, oh man, I'm never going to have what everyone else has. There was a period like that because I didn't play it safe. Like, I'm just such a risk taker and I'm just so bold and, you know, I'm so brave, everyone always says. And, you know, I'm not afraid. Well, it took me a long time to get there, but I learned that if I don't do it, the regret or the safety zone and getting in comfortability is the worst place to ever be. There's so much suffering in comfortability because then you start comparing yourself to other people. And your body, like when you're not growing, you're stagnant. If you're stagnant, you're actually dying. And so it's just like, you know, there is no plateau. There's only growth and there's only death. And like, you're either heading one way or the other, in my opinion. And I'd rather not head towards death anytime soon. So like, I think that there's a lot of things there that you just said that I think are so important for anyone out there. Like, if you don't do it, no one's going to do it for you, right? And if you don't do it now, you're going to regret it tomorrow that quickly, because that's how fast opportunities are gone. And if to fully anchor this, if we didn't pursue what we are pursuing now, when we started talking almost 5 months ago now, we would not be in the situation we are in and prepared as we are to capitalize on the opportunity that's going on right now with the Writers Guild being on strike. I think that's what they're called. And and so, like, this is the thing we don't realize. Sometimes we have to have faith and we have to have hope and we have to believe in ourselves and our passion. And we just have to put one step in front of the other, one foot in front of the other, day by day, and just have the small wins and have the small little gains, and they will start to stack up to big things. Like, I can tell you, the we didn't even have a name for the TV show probably until a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago. Like, we were just we had an idea and we ran with it, and the TV show name wasn't important. And then we're like, oh my gosh, this is starting to get traction and we're starting to get some people interested. Like, what, we better come up with a name, and we got to copyright this thing. And so it's like all of those things sort of happened. So I'm like, you know, you just got to do it. And I agree with you. You know, I don't recommend going to California with only $500 in your pocket, although it was worth a lot more 20 years ago. But
it was, but it still wasn't enough.
Yeah, it still wasn't enough. And I've been there sometimes, or I start businesses. And weirdly, I will tell everyone that if you came and your parents paid your way, you have too much comfortability. And for me, when I have to do it on my own, when I don't have that comfortability, that's when the greatness happens. When I'm trying to figure it out, where I'm not taking shortcuts, where I have to have the pain, where I might not have always the financial resources needed to get a project off the ground, you find ways that end up benefiting you way more than getting the money on the short run, whatever, or getting a lucky break, whatever got you. Because like I said, the opportunity's here. But the preparedness of Chris, the preparedness of Noble, the preparedness of Steven, the preparedness of me, of all of us literally stacking skills our whole life and being open-minded and letting nothing be below us, and, you know, making sure that we grew with what's in film or in food or business or whatever, because you also have your own company. You're also an entrepreneur. You're also acting sometimes. Like, nothing is below the person who's climbed up from the bottom, where if you're given something, then things become below you and you're entitled and you don't get as much opportunity, I feel, in life, because you're not creating it yourself. And that's usually where opportunity comes from. So I appreciate your time, Chris, and coming on the show. We'll have to have you back on again, because I have some like other questions for you, but we ran out of time today. So I'll talk to you about maybe doing another part two in a couple weeks as we get through the next 2 weeks with me handling and us handling all the stuff that's coming at us for Foodtopia. But I appreciate you, and thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It was my pleasure to be on, and I'm so looking forward to the adventure that, you know, we're about to embark on.
And just so everyone knows, I'm going to end this with, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts before I say this, and you can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro, BIZZARRO. But we did this whole thing in one take. There'll be probably no edits. Like, that's incredible. That never happens. But it just shows how comfortable we are doing this and how well we work together. So thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate you.
That's awesome. What a great way to end it. Thank you, Justin. And we will we'll talk soon. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. And okay. We're out.